Chapter 13. What has happened before? The use of glory. Prophecy and foresight. Ra opened his eyes to absolute blackness, a darkness deep enough to penetrate the senses, filling his eye sockets like pools of spilled oil. He waited for his perceptions to align. There was no fear. He knew the sensation of his master's summons. Remorse sat within his heart this time. The ambush of the ossuary still tore at him, its questions presenting no easy answers. We were so close. No answer came from the Emperor, if his king had even heard. Soon there was light, faint, fractured, tormentingly distant. Light manifesting in pinpricks, the iota eyes of faraway suns. They speckled the void in a milky rash, glinting, winking, each one staring with a light that took a brief eternity to reach Ra's senses. He was without form and shape. He merely existed in the void, a presence above a world cradled in the infinite black, a war-eaten planet bathed by the fusion glare of its insignificant yellow sun. Terror, he said, without mouth, breath, teeth, or tongue. Terror. The Emperor's voice thrummed through his skull. Disembodied, as eternal as any star. Mere centuries ago, in the thrall of the Unification Wars, warlords and archpriestesses and magician kings and clan chiefs fight over the harrowed territory of a broken world. My Thunder Legion marches to war against them. Against all of them. It grieves me not to have fought at your side in those days, my king. Your loyalty is noted, yet your grief is irrelevant. Why am I here? Ra thought and spoke at once. No discernible separation existed between what was in his mind and what he vocalized into the void. Because I will it. It was the only answer he required, but he had hoped for more. Whatever purpose this illumination served was, so far, beyond Ra's guesswork. With a wrenching lurch, the stars spun, light bent and folded. The infinite blackness at once welcomed and rejected him, embracing his presence but defying his senses as he sought to process the speed at which he flew through the void. Nebulae bloomed before him, around him, as thick to the eyes as the poison gas clouds of forbidden weaponry, yet perfectly dark to all other senses. Worlds turned around God's eye stars, some seared beneath the fat blue heat of swollen suns, some left cold on the outermost edges of the stellar ballet, travelling almost in exile among the frozen rocks that tumbled through deep and lifeless space. So many of these globular jewels were not jewels at all, as unsuited as they were to cradling human life. For all of the terraforming pushed upon the galaxy's scattered worlds during the wonder-working of the Dark Age of Technology, an infinity of planets still revolved in the savage, storm-racked, gaseous serenity that rendered human habitation impossible. The true gems were just as varied in shade and hue. The alkali ochre of desert land predominated, plain smooth by the industry of colonization or shattered in great chasm rents by tectonic unrest. Oceanic worlds were turbulent sapphires and aquamarines, swallowing sunlight beneath their immense depths. And many defied even water's pure hue, instead saturated by endless seas stained cristoberal by choking clouds of bacterium life, or rippling carnelian depths playing haven to hosts of aquacarnosaurs. Colour upon colour upon colour. Many worlds blending their offerings together, landmass by varied landmass. And yet the blue-green of unriven Terran antiquity was rarest of all. Such an innocent shade defied inevitability. Everywhere mankind set foot, it tore from the earth and sucked from the seas. It harvested and wrought, it claimed, it conquered, it destroyed. Nowhere was this truer than amidst the worlds turning around Terra's own sun. Ra hadn't been surprised when he first saw Terra from orbit. seeing the throne world herself a sickly beige, strangled by pollution, raked by the scars of endless war. Mars, once terraformed into a place of palatial idyll, where human ingenuity had brought forth vegetation from dead soil, had been war-torn back into the dustable barrenness of its pre-colonization era. Ra was far from those worlds now. He twisted bodilessly in the black, facing another cloud-wreathed sphere, this one a Pangean orb of earthen continents and only modest seas. Cityscapes showed as grey bruising across the landmasses, becoming pinprick-lit beacons as night fell swiftly across the hemisphere. Mere heartbeats later, dawn returned to the visible hemisphere, extinguishing the cityscape's multitude of lights, restoring them to the grey blotches of any civilization viewed from orbit. Millions of people must have called the world home. Billions. "What world is this?" Ra asked the void. There was no answer. With the ease of taking a breath, he was flung through the night heavens once more, soaring dreamlike without weight or momentum. A migraine took form before his senses, painting the void with the retinal smearing of terminal brain cancer. Stars burned the nebulaic gases around them, sending streams of shimmering poison back into the void. They burned and strangled in the shifting tides of some alien substance that was and wasn't gas, that was and wasn't real. The Ocularis Malefica. A warp storm. The warp storm, where the alternate reality of the warp had shattered its way into true space and curdled dozens of star systems in its hostile miasma. Here was where two universes met, and both suffered with the union. He stared at the rotting eye polluting the void. It stared back, somehow seething, malevolent, without sentience. "Why are you showing me all of this, sir?"
"I am not. Not really. This is merely how you process what you are learning when our thoughts are linked. Your mind is attuning to the scale of what I am imprinting upon it."
Absolute loyalty meant he took reassurance at the Emperor's words. He did not, however, take much in the way of easy understanding.
"Sire?"
he asked the void. The void's answer was to send him hurling through space, weightless and ethereal, surrounded by the scream of a dying species. Years ago, centuries ago, when much of the galaxy's human territories sweltered beneath the choking fire of old night's warp storms. Here, among the Eldar, all was at peace. He saw orbital platforms of sorcery-spun bone, so delicate that a breath of solar wind would surely shatter their tenuous frailty. He saw lush worlds of vegetation, where spires of crystal and psychically sung wraithbone formed great spires and connecting walkways, while webway gates flared with endless use inside the towers of grand bloodlines. He saw a race crying out for more, always for more, for music that stimulated the biology of their brains, for wine that sent fire through their nervous systems, for entertainment and pleasures that replaced dignity with the harmony of madness. He saw things wearing Eldar skin, moving in the shadows of their society, caressing with blades, killing with biting kisses, drinking blood and eating forbidden flesh with filed fang smiles. The truth burst from pale alien flesh. It erupted free. Claws tore Eldar open from within, doorways of bloody meat ripping open in bodies and minds grown soft by decadence and indolence. Warp things crawled from ears, from nostrils, from tear ducts, shattering the skulls of their hosts as they swelled and grew. Demons of hybrid gender, as much scorpion as maiden and man, shrieked newborn and blood wet at the burning skies. And far, far from such horrors, the human race was locked away in the isolation of old night. A million different worlds, with no capacity to contact one another, each one alone in the fiery twilight of eternal warp storms raking through true space. Only as one species died could another rise. The Eldar fall, damned by their own vices, eating into the wards around their psychic souls. Warp storms that had racked every world bleed away, focusing in final clusters. The Maelstrom, the Ocularis Malefica, and others far lesser besides. The human race rises, old night giving way to the dawn as the eternal storms recede. A new godling has been born. Slaanesh, the Eldar weep and cry. Slaanesh, Slaanesh. But the rest of the suddenly silent galaxy takes its first breaths in a new age. Ships begin to sail. Stellar empires form. One of those empires will become the only empire. The Imperium of Man, the twin kingdoms of Terra and Mars, binding together to conquer the now serene night sky. A crusade, then an empire, all beneath one man's banner. Everything that has happened will happen again. It is the way of things. Yet humanity's death will eclipse the Eldar's annihilation tenfold. For we are evolving into a far more psychically powerful race. Uncontrolled psychic energy will tear reality apart. The warp's entities will feed on the carcass of the galaxy. There must be control, and control must be maintained. Control, Ra repeated. The scale of such ambition. The necessity of it. Lest mankind face a far harsher extinction than the Eldar. Their souls shine bright within the warp, drawing the predations of the beasts within its tides. Soon, every human soul will become a beacon of fire. How? Ra wondered. How can you know? What other unbelievable futures have you foreseen? How can evolution itself be conquered and controlled? Through vision, Ra. We see the warp as an alternate reality. And this is so. It is a mirror, reflecting our every thought and action. Every hate, every death, every nightmare and dream, echoing into eternity. We break into this place, into a realm that harbors the pain and suffering of every man and woman and child to ever live. And we use it to sail between the stars. Because we must. Because until now there has been no other choice.
The webway,
Ra murmured into the silent night.
The webway. Mankind is ascending, Ra. Humanity is taking a great developmental step, evolving into a psychic race. Uncontrolled psychers are lodestones for the warp's touch. A species comprising them would suffer as the Eldar suffered. And for the Eldar, this evolutionary juncture was their final step before destruction. I will not let humanity be destroyed by the same fate. The Eldar had the answers within their grasp, but were too naive and too proud to save themselves. They had the webway, which could have been their salvation. But they never fully severed their connection to the warp. Their soul fires drew damnation upon their entire species.
Ra knew this, yet never had it been related to him in these exact words, flavored as they were by the promise of prophecy. With the webway, humanity would need no navigators. They would never need to rely on the unreliable warp whispers of astropaths. Vessels would never enter the warp to be lost or torn apart by the entities that dwelt within it. But the Eldar had done the same, had they not?
No. They eradicated their reliance on the warp, but they never severed their species' connection to it. I will do that for humanity, once and for all.
Ra twisted in the nothingness, turning to stare at the light of so many distant stars. He faced Terra without knowing how he knew its direction, only knowing that he was right. One of those pinprick starlights was Sol, so far away.
I have conquered humanity's cradle world. I have conquered the galaxy in order to shape mankind's development as it at last evolves into a psychic race.
No isolated pockets of our species may remain free, lest in their ignorance they invite destruction upon us all. I have shattered the hold of faith and fear over the human mind. Superstition and religion must continue to be outlawed, for they are easy doors for the warp's denizens to enter the human heart. This is what we have already done. And soon I will offer humanity a way of interstellar travel without reliance upon Geller fields and navigators. I will offer them means of communicating between worlds without reliance on the warp dreams of astropaths. And when the Imperium shields the entire species within the laws of my Pax Imperialis, when humanity is freed from the warp and united beneath my vision, I can at last shepherd mankind's growth into a psychic race.
The Primarchs, thought Ra. The Thunder Legion, the Unification Wars, the Great Crusade, the Space Marine Legions, the Imperial Truth, the Webway Project, the Black Ships, with Psykers huddled in the holds, watched over by the Silent Sisterhood. It is all about control. Tyranny is not the end, Ra. Absolute control is but the means to the end.
The hubris. Ra couldn't fight the insidiously treacherous thought, to see the hidden depths of his master's ambitions.
The sheer unrivaled hubris.
The necessity. The Emperor's voice was iced iron. Not arrogance, not vainglory. Necessity. I have already told you, Ra. Humans need rulers. Now you see why. A single murder is on one end of the spectrum, for rulers bring law. The hope of the entire race is at the far end of the continuum, for I, as ruler, bring salvation. Ra stared towards distant Terra, unsure if he was humbled or touched by the alien sensation of something akin to terror. You are shedding tears, Ra. Surprised, the custodian touched gold-clad fingertips to his tattooed cheeks. They came away glinting with faint wetness in the light of distant suns.
I have never done so before.
That is not true. You wept on the night your mother died. You merely do not remember it. Ra still looked at the faint moisture on his fingertip. How curious.
Forgive the indignity, sire.
There is nothing to forgive. The immensity of my ambitions sit ill within mortal minds, even among mortals that will live as close to eternally as my 10,000.
And yet, Ra thought in another treasonous whisper, it is all threatened, coming apart at the seams.
The Primarchs, agreed the Emperor. Witness them.
Ra dragged in a cold breath. He was on guard immediately, his spear in his hands, razor gaze flicking across his surroundings, seeking threats. But in every direction, all he saw was a featureless landscape far too flat to be of natural origin. No matter where he looked, the horizon was a pale line of useless, bare land meeting a cloudless sky. Even his retinal gauges registered his surroundings as impossibly even. This was the work of the Mechanicum and their continental geoplaning engines. In that moment, he knew where he was.
Alanor.
His voice echoed strangely. For all he knew, he was the only living soul on the whole world. The wind took his word and carried it away.
Alanor, the Emperor confirmed.
Ra turned to see his master clad in the brazen light of layered golden plate, festooned with imperial aquilas, the way a shaman might decorate his flesh with wards against black magic.
Do you remember when you last walked the earth of this world, Ra?
How could he not? It had been at the Triumph, when millions of troops had gathered to bid the Emperor farewell from the Great Crusade, in the final hours before he returned to Terra. The day that nine Primarchs had gathered together at their father's side, the day that Horus had been proclaimed War Master. A single breath later, Ra was back there once more. The salt flats of geoplaned banality were host to a sea of colours. Banners, flags, soldiers, tanks, titans. The eye couldn't take in the immensity of the sight. The mind couldn't process it. The Martian Mechanicum had cleaved an entire continent to make the procession possible, dismantling mountain ranges, filling valleys, contouring the planet's crust for the most monumental gathering since the declaration of the Great Crusade. And the sound! The sound! The thrum of so many engines was a living, draconic roar. Regiments of pristine warriors standing beneath remade war standards cried their victories to the sky. A single Titan's footsteps made for infrequent rhythmic thunder. A battle division's worth of giant war machines made for a storm capable of shaking a city to its foundations. Here walked thrice that number, and thrice again, and thrice more beyond that. The Martian behemoths strode over and through the millions of troops at their ankles, leaving immense footprints that served to finally carve features upon the plain plateau. The lunar wolves had mustered in unified ranks at the procession's vanguard, still clad in the pearly white of their nobler incarnation, rather than the murky green of their self-damnation as the sons of Horus. And with them, phalanx upon phalanx of warriors from every legion. Even those without Primarchs present still stood proud beneath the million war banners waving in the desert wind. The Primarchs stood apart, occupying the colossal dais erected for their specific purpose. They towered above even the great imperators and warmongers that no other war machine could match, and each of the Emperor's gene-forged generals variously bathed in or endured the shouted jubilation of the organized masses below. One by one they walked forwards to greet the assembled host. Angron, raising his weapons high, consecrated by the army's roars, just as he had once been exalted by the cries of arena crowds in his life as Angronius of Nuceria, Lord of the Red Sands. Lorgar Aurelian, herald of the Emperor, throwing his arms wide and beckoning the millions of loyal souls to shout louder, harder. He was a demagogue, presented with a crowd that offered nothing but vindication. Sanguinius was next, reluctant and wrathful and soulful Sanguinius, the Emperor's eagle-winged son and the living avatar of the Imperium. The cries that met his presentation rang loudest of all, and the tens of millions of men and women gathered below were far too distant to ever see how their near worship flickered uneasily in the angel's eyes. Even so, as they bade and begged, he drew his sword in salute to the masses of humanity arrayed across the plain. They cried their throats raw as he spread his great wings wide. A single feather flew free, descending upon the wind in slow whirls. It would become a sacred relic to the Imperial Army regiment that claimed it, with the image of a single white feather forever after emblazoned in a place of honour upon their campaign banners. One by one they came and presented themselves, until at last the master of mankind took his place. And all of that raucous, rapturous cheering died. Every eye looked to the golden figure holding court at the centre of the dais. Those too far removed, kilometres away from the processional core, looked to erected monitors connected to drifting servo-skull feeds, relaying the images. The Emperor stood before them all, armoured and armed, but never again to march with them to war. Men and women stared up at him, unaware they were weeping. Even many legionaries' faces would have shown tear trails down their gene-altered features, had they not been hidden by the grills of crusade and iron-pattern helms. Horus was declared War Master. The cheers returned. Victory was celebrated. Glory to the Imperium. Glory to the Emperor. Glory to the War Master. All proceeded as expected. No one thought the Emperor would speak again at the triumph's conclusion. What was there that he could say? Every soul gathered knew what he intended to do. He would leave the Great Crusade in the hands of his sons, returning to Terra to oversee the workings of the ever-expanding Imperium. Surely nothing he could say would lessen the blow of his abandonment. And yet, he had spoken once more, one last time, after all.
"I leave not by choice," he promised them.
His voice carried across the geo-burned plateau, aided by the speaker drones and vox-emitters liberally populating the muster.
"I leave not by choice. I leave only because I must. Know this, and know my regret. But know also that I return to Terra for the good of our Imperium."
From among the custodian guards stationed nearby, in a rank behind the Primarchs, two incarnations of Ra stood watching in silence. The first was helmed and at attention, his guardian spear clutched in one gloved hand, the warrior himself a perfect mirror of the custodian standing at his side. The second was unhelmed, smiling faintly to so vividly recall this breathtaking moment once more. The Emperor turned from the crowd, moving through the pack of demigods around him. Already they were regarding their father and each other with newfound caution. One of their number had been elevated above the rest, no longer merely first among equals, but definitively named first. Like any family, their reactions and emotions at such a development would prove variable.
"Ra," the Emperor greeted him.
The worthies around them both continued speaking, no longer paying either of them any heed at all.
"All of this," the custodian said.
He gestured not only to the Primarchs, but the amassed pomp itself, the geoscaped continent, the sky pregnant with dropships, the gathered regimental masses weeping and cheering below.
"Why, sire? I never asked it then, and I have always wondered since. Why all of this?"
"For glory," the Emperor replied.
"To honour the creatures that call themselves my sons, my necessary tools. They feed on glory as if it were a palpable sustenance. Their own glory, of course, no different from the kings and emperors of old. It scarcely crosses their mind that glory matters nothing to me. I could have had a planet's worth of glory any time I wished it, when I walked in the species' shadow throughout prehistory. Only three of them ever thought to ask why I timed my emergence as I did."
Ra looked at the gathered pantheon of Primarchs. He didn't ask which three had questioned the Emperor. In truth, he didn't care. Such lore was irrelevant.
"And so I gave them Ullinor," the Emperor said. "They crave recognition for their honour and achievements, and the triumph was the ultimate expression of that. In that regard, they are just as the Achaean gods and goddesses of the Olympos were believed to be."
Ra knew the legends. Zoas Lightning Father, Avena Warbringer, Hermios Swiftrunner, Heracles Half-God, bickering, violent divinities who were powerful enough to act with impunity over the mortals that prayed to them.
"Humanity's perception of god-beings has never been consistent," the Emperor mused. "Give any being great power and the largesse to act with impunity, and what you have is indivisible from those ancient myths. The rage of thunder gods, the battle drums of nations that prayed to war gods, the madness and decadence of powerful kings. That is what true power has always done to the mortal mind. Elements of humanity become magnified, more human than human. In that light, are the Primarchs not deities?"
Ra grunted, noncommittal.
"Well, that is not what I meant, my liege. I mean, how could they betray you without warning? Why did you not foresee it?"
For the first time in Ra's memory, the Emperor hesitated. He wondered if he was the first of the custodian guard, perhaps even the first imperial soul to ask such a thing. The 10,000 had spoken of it amongst themselves many hundreds of times. Consensus on the truth was impossible to reach, Their place was to live in loyalty and die in duty, not question in doubt.
You ask about the very nature of foresight, said the Emperor. From your words and tone, you suggest it is no different to looking back down a road already travelled and seeing the places and people you have passed.
Ra couldn't tear his eyes from the Primarchs. Fulgrim smiling, always smiling. Magnus stern in the guarded pretense that none must perceive he bore a troubled mind. Proximity to them, even in this moment of glory, especially in this moment of glory, sickened the custodian heart and soul. How he ached to strike them down. Is that not the function of foresight, my king? To see the future before it unfolds?
You imply omniscience.
I imply nothing, unless by my own ignorance. I merely seek enlightenment.
The Emperor seemed to weigh his guardian's words.
I see.
I mean no disrespect, my liege.
I know, Ra. I take no umbrage at your questions. Think on this, then. I prepared them all, this pantheon of proud godlings that insist they are my heirs. I warned them of the warp's perils. Coupled with this, they knew of those dangers themselves. The Imperium has relied on navigators to sail the stars and astropaths to communicate between worlds since the Empire's very first breath. The Imperium itself is only possible because of those enduring souls. No void sailor or psychically touched soul can help but know of the warp's insidious predation. Ships have always been lost during their unstable journeys. Astropaths have always suffered for their powers. Navigators have always seen horrors swimming through those strange tides. I commanded the cessation of Legion Librarius divisions as a warning against the unrestrained use of psychic power. One of our most precious technologies, the Gellerfield, exists to shield vessels from the warp's corrosive touch. These are not secrets, Ra, nor mystical lore known only to a select few. Even possession by warp-wrought beings is not unknown. The 16th witnessed it with his own eyes, long before he convinced his kindred to walk a traitor's path with him. That which we call the warp is a universe alongside our own, seething with limitless alien hostility. The Primarchs have always known this. What difference would it have made had I labelled the warp's entities demons or dark gods?
I don't know, sire. I can't see what might have changed. I cannot see into the skeins of fate.
The Emperor was silent for a moment.
You speak of seeing the future, he finally said, without knowing the limits of what you speak.
In a heartbeat, the Ullinor triumph was gone, banished between breaths. Ra and the Emperor stood alone on a rocky shore, ankle-deep in icy salt water. They faced a great cliff, reaching up hundreds of metres, sheer in many places, sloped in others. Even as Ra stared, loose rocks clattered down its surface, splashing into the rising water not far from where they stood.
Where you stand now, the Emperor said, is the present. Do you see the top of the cliff?
Of course, sire.
That is the future. You see it. You know what it is. Now reach it.
Ra hesitated. Now?
Climb, custodian. You questioned the nature of my foresight. I am granting you an answer.
Ra moved to the rock face, looking over the stone, finding his first grips. He tested them, finding them strong, even against the weight of his armour. The weaker ones he avoided. Less than 10 heartbeats had passed when a rock cracked and crumbled in his gauntleted hand. Ra skidded, arresting his fall by clutching at the stone. Another gave way, sending him the last few metres to the rocky ground in a breathy cloud of white dust.
You looked for places to safely grip, said the Emperor. Yet you have already stumbled.
You did not know the stone was weak.
It looks strong.
The Emperor smiled, and it was by far the most unpleasant sight Ra had ever witnessed. Emotion painted across a human face, as false as the grotesques at any masquerade.
Yes, the Emperor agreed. It did. And you only learned the truth too late. Now climb.
Ra hesitated once more, a hesitation that bordered upon defiance, as if such an action were even possible for one such as he in the presence of his master.
It is not necessary, sire. I believe I understand now.
Do you? Look out across the water, Ra.
Ra returned to the Emperor's side and did as he was bid. The water rippled in sedate waves, sloshing around the rocks that lined the shore. At the horizon's very edge, he could see the mirroring lip of another landmass.
I see another land. An island, perhaps?
It is Albia, many thousands of years ago. But that is unimportant. You see the shore. You know it is there. You know you could reach it by ship or by swimming or by flight. That is what you know.
The Emperor's dark eyes lost their focus. He faced towards the distant shore, but Ra doubted he was still seeing it.
So you journey towards it. But all you can see is your destination. You cannot see the beasts below the water that devour travellers. You cannot know if the wind will blow and throw you aside from your course. And if the wind does blow, will it send you east, west, north, south? Will it shatter your craft completely? Perhaps there are rocks beneath the water, impossible to see until they grind and tear at the hull of your ship. Perhaps the inhabitants of that far shore will fire upon your craft before you can make landfall.
The Emperor turned back to Ra, though, curiously, his eyes didn't clear.
But you can see the shore, Ra. Did you fail to predict any of those possible flaws between here and there?
Perhaps I predicted them all, sire. Perhaps I factored in the possibilities of each one occurring.
Maybe so. And what of the eventualities you could not predict? Each passing moment is rich with 100,000 possible pathways. The craftswoman making your boat may suffer a heart failure before she can gift it to you. Or she decides not to offer you the boat at all. You say the wrong words to her. You offer the wrong currency. She lies to you, for she is a thief. An enemy sabotages your boat before you set sail. You reach halfway across this channel of water, only to see a more appealing coast to the east or west. Minute after minute, possibility upon possibility, path after path, all variables you are unable to see from where you stand at this moment.
The Emperor reached out as if he could crush the coast in his golden gauntlet. His expression was cold in its pale ferocity.
I can see the coast, Ra. I know what awaits me there. But I cannot see all the infinite vicissitudes between here and there.
At last he lowered his hand.
That is foresight, Ra. To know a trillion possible futures, and to be left to guess at the infinite ways of arriving at each one. To map out even one possible eventuality, taking into account every decision that every living being will make that will impact upon the others around it, would take all of the lifetimes I have already lived. The only way to know anything for certain.
He trailed off, gesturing to the distant shore.
Is to reach the other side, said Ra.
The Emperor nodded.
When the vault was attacked and the Primarch project compromised, should I have destroyed them all? Or do as I did, and trust that I would be able to restore them to grandeur? If I had destroyed them to prevent their abduction, would the Imperium have risen as it has now done?
Or would the Great Crusade have stuttered and failed without its generals? There are no answers yet, Ra. We are in the middle of the sea, beset by strange tides and unexpected beasts, but not yet thrown off course.
I won't fail you, sire.
The Emperor closed his eyes and winced as pain flickered across his dusky features. He touched all 10 fingertips to his face beneath the weight of some silent strain.
My liege?
The forces of Magnus's folly press harder against the Mechanicum's junctions. I do not know how this can be. Their efforts were already relentless and monumental, coupled with the intrusions within the original web. I fear time is growing short.
We've failed to destroy the echo of the first murder. Why did it pull back from us? How can it be stopped?
The Emperor swallowed, his eyes bloodshot and haunted in their distraction.
Awaken, Ra.
Ra opened his eyes, his senses immediately attuning to the sound of sirens.